start your talk.
Thank you. Good morning. I do apologize. You were going to have Kraftwerk, but you don't have it. And there was going to be a second video, which was from the 1950s, about talking about why do you want to be a librarian. But I think everybody sitting in this room kind of knows why we want to do it. I'm asked today to know what we're doing and whether we're doing it according to the value systems of the institutions that we work at. I want to talk to you, first of all, about this graphic, which I call the Richler circles, which is about change. Everybody loves change, particularly when it happens to the person sitting beside you. And that's our problem with change. I'm okay, change them. I created these circles when I'm working with educational institutions because I wanted to show senior management that you cannot change a thing. You change the whole thing, the people, the systems, and the environments to create embedded change. And that is what you're measuring, the distance traveled in the change. When we look at the change mechanism, I want to talk a bit about the more, the different, and the better. This is from Valerie Stewart, who writes extensively about change management. In education, in the UK, and again, I'm just going to be using the UK as my basis, we do a lot of the first, more for less. We have a deficit within the university or college. They look around for willing victims. All academic staff stand back, and all support or professional services are stuck. So the first place that cuts happen are in the professional services, i.e. learning and library sources, or library services, or the resource budget. So we end up doing more for less. We end up with less people still delivering the promises of the service level agreement. Not a good way to start change. The different model is quite interesting. In England and the rest of the UK, we're very good at bringing in brand consultants who come in and rebrand. So we call it something different. We change maybe the system, but the people and the environment are still the same. So it's not an embedded change. What we're striving for, and this isn't rocket science, is better. Now, better can be different. Better very rarely is more for less. So today I want to share with you some of the outcomes of a consultancy that I've just undertaken, a 13-month consultancy. And through that, the research I've also undertaken to look at finding a matrix of impact measurements that would actually adjust itself and align itself to a program of change. I'm going to be talking about Sunderland College, which is located in the northeast of England. Sunderland College is a large and vibrant tertiary further education college, and it is one of the 412 FE colleges in the UK. I'm proud to say it's also the 14th largest college in the UK. There are approximately 8,000 full-time students, 6,000 part-time students, and 1,200 higher education students. This is not an unlikely model. You have a lot of mixed economy colleges within the UK which have a direct cohort of higher education delivered on site. The college is also spread across five different sites and distances of approximately 10 miles between sites. Well, we're talking about curriculum liaison. That was particularly what I wanted to talk to you today, which is a new strata that has been created within the information and learning services for the direct delivery of the ILS portfolio from information and digital literacy, research skills, referencing skills, and the very important reading list project, which I will touch upon a bit later in this presentation. Okay, so we all kind of recognize this as a normal library service structure. What's interesting about this structure is that it's across five sites, so each of the columns represents a site. It is a linear or hierarchical, and it has lots of barriers in it, financial as well as physical. Very little career progression. Definitely a situation in England we call dead man's shoes, where somebody has to disappear before you actually can have any career progression. The five sites were running autonomously, which does not help the student experience. We're all being held hostage to the student experience. And what was happening was that students at one site were having a different quality of experience within the library and learning services than other students. So I was asked to come in and do a complete restructure. When undertaking a restructure, someone asked me this question about, do I come in as a consultant and say, this is what you do, or do I sit around and we try and decide what is the best for the college? It's a mixture of the two. You have to come in with ideas, and you have to sit in the college for a number of weeks just to see whether or not what they think is not working is not working. Perception is a very interesting thing on measuring impact, and I will get to that in a bit. So this is what we have now. We have a single unit that's been brought together from the e-learning team and the library services to create the Information and Learning Services Directorate. There is one learning services manager, but more importantly, and I want to talk about this today, about the curriculum liaison officers, the curriculum liaison officers are outside of the learning centres. And that's very, very important. It very rarely happens in the UK, in FE colleges, that there is money to be able to take people out of a centre-based environment and put them as free-form so that they can deliver and respond to the needs of information challenges that are coming from our students and our staff. When we did this restructure, I'm also proud to say that five new positions were created, all the financial bars were lifted, and we managed to promote quite a few people into the new positions because they had the qualifications, but because no one had actually left, they were stuck where they were. So we created new career progressions as well for these people. So that's the people part of the change three circles, change matrix. I now want to just look a bit at the environment. Of the five sites, there was one site that was totally malfunctioning, and that was a site that was located within that building, a listed Victorian building. Now, when you're trying to do a change event, you can put the new pressure in to senior management to restructure in terms of staff. To try and find the money to reinvigorate or recreate a learning environment is critical. And I was lucky that we found a bit of a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So that's what it looked like from the inside. Not particularly welcoming. I can see some of you going, oh, don't think I want to be a visitor into that. The yellow hanging from the ceiling were a series of dynamic, challenges in terms of soundproofing. Somebody had the idea that if you hang fabric from the roof, it'll absorb the sound of people being unhappy on the ground. It didn't quite work that way. What we got were a lot of people having asthma attacks because of the dust collecting in the fabric. As you can see, they've tried to deal with the second story, which, of course, this was an auditorium like this being made into a learning center. What was also important was the busyness of the center. If you can see, there are lots of things on the wall, mostly saying don't, and don't even think about don't. Students didn't want to come in. More importantly, I suppose, or is equally as important, staff didn't want to come in, and the library staff didn't want to be in. We had huge levels of sickness and absenteeism. We also had staff who said, send me anywhere, please, but here. So again, looking at the change event, you can restructure and create new job opportunities and promotional aspects, and then you stick them in this center. So again, part of the change circle was to get the money to create that. That's the same center. What we decided to do was you cannot change a Victorian center and make it into a 21st. So let us celebrate the Victorian design and make it better for the learners inside. So as you can see, clean design. The windows are covered with electronic window blinds. We put all of the stock on wheels so that we can change the dynamics of the space. We introduced all sorts of new innovations so that the students felt in control. This is a picture of the before. Again, you can see the hallway going down. If you're a fire marshal, you'll look at the end door and think, yes, that is a fire exit. Isn't that interesting? We were so short of space, or the space was misaligned, that people were sitting in the fire exit. Also, you can see how chaotic it is. Students trying to find information were just driven to distraction because everything looked like everything else. The other side of this now is this picture. That is the same side of the corridor. Again, mobile shelving, circular tables. When I was doing my dissertation, I wrote about circular tables. Seems about a bizarre thing to write about. But meetings at a circular table seem to go much faster and have much better output than meetings on straight tables. I'm sorry to say you're all at straight tables today, so I won't ask for your output and the level of output. But for students in a further education college who work on group projects, putting them at straight tables meant that they were always at odds with the space. By creating a circular environment, students would be able to work together, keep the noise down, because if I ask somebody from that end of that row to talk to someone at that end of that row, you're going to disturb everybody in between. Circular environment keeps the noise down. It actually prompts students to work. I know this sounds like a wonderful thing, and if I could sell it, I could probably make a fortune. But I think it's simple design. Design for function. This was the day that we stripped out all the computers. Again, the computers would not allow, the way they were set up, students to work together. So inevitably, students, when they can't work together, or are told they can't work together, they find a way to work together. So what we would have is one person sitting down and six people standing behind them, which didn't help the person who was sitting beside them, who wasn't on the same project. Again, what we had to do was realign the space so that students felt that they had technology and the resources behind them. Again, the circular tables with the technology, we can still put about five people around every computer. And it doesn't impact hugely on the person beside them. Hopefully, the person beside them is still working on the same project. Or more importantly, as an academic, hopefully the person beside them is actually contributing to the same project. In terms of the signage, that's a huge problem. You know, how do you tell students how to do something or how to behave by not putting up the don't? And again, this was only those in the PCs present in the IT area. I found that really quite amusing. Because in the end, what we were saying to students is don't work here. The don't signs are a huge part of our lives. I know that within library services, most librarians and learning resources staff will tell you they spend probably 90% of their time policing a space. That they tell people to be quiet, or they tell people to turn off the phone, or they tell people to don't take their food and drink. Can I just have a show of hands? How many people within their centers actually have food and drink? Right? How many of you spend your time trying to find those that bring food and drink in? Yeah. I suggested, and it was agreed, that we take away the no food or drink ban. And then what we do is we encourage students to take responsibility. They can bring in a drink provided it has a lid, and they can bring in food provided it's cold, because cold food doesn't have the leftover smell. Clever move. Makes a huge difference to these students to be able to eat and drink and work. Now, there was a study done in secondary education in the UK 5 years ago which showed that dehydrated students achieve 10% less than hydrated students. So what we have to do is talk about what are we doing to students sitting in a learning center being told that they can't have any food or drink with them and they're working on a long-term project. It's a war we are not going to win. And trust me, students are very, very good at sneaking in food and drink in the most strangest places, and I won't go there. I'll let you imagine it. As well as this change project, we created internet cafes in all of the five sites. This is in the newest site that I'm showing you photos of. This is at the very bottom of the library, of the learning center, is this internet cafe. There are no doors that separate it from the rest of it. So what we're trying to say to students is if you want, you can sit in this environment, the Starbucks environment, or you can come in and sit within a different environment. It's all the same space. It's just we're using it differently. This was on the day we opened, and I can say it hasn't been empty like this since. Excuse me. And it's quite interesting as a side comment. Academic staff love to come in here, get their lattes, and mark. And the plus of that is that students are actually able to talk to their tutors about particular assignments, and it isn't a barrier situation, it's actually an enabling situation. So we've had an added attraction that we hadn't thought about. So let's talk about, I mentioned before, about reading lists. Now last night we had an interesting conversation with our colleagues at the reception about what is the purpose of a reading list. I could probably set that as an assignment now, and you could do 1,000 words on it, no problem. In further education colleges, the reading list tended to be the afterthought. It was something that you were given after validation and was expected to purchase too. It had no link up at all with academic delivery. And in many ways, it was what I call hospital food. Hospital food is if by unhappy circumstances you find yourself in a hospital in the UK, your first meal has always been chosen by the person who was in the bed before you. So it comes to a new member of staff will inherit a resource package that's been chosen before them. And inevitably, they will hate the package that that person has chosen. So we have to replicate and or start all over again. The purpose of the reading list seemed to have been lost. So part of the change program was to get a higher level of accountability and actually to embed it within the whole college structure delivered by curriculum liaison staff. This is actually not going to animate the way I want it, so I won't even click further. If you take the first column, you will see that academic staff and curriculum liaison staff will sit and have a conversation about the resources we currently have and how that maps to the reading list. The reading list it's a very much pointed reading list, a focused reading list that talks about your subjects that you want students to purchase, the resources that you want them to read as underpinning knowledge, the resources you want them to look at as extended knowledge, journals, websites, chapters, e-books, and e-journals. Very pointed. That is then agreed and submitted for any validation or accreditation process that happens within the university or college, in this case the college, and it has been accepted by quality and standards. If they do not get an agreed and signed off reading list, they will not accredit or validate the program. That's an important step forward to recognizing the power of the reading list and the amount of resources that we purchase or mispurchase that are never actually signposted by academic staff. The final column is about strategic planning and review, and the reading list again surfaces because it is the bedrock of where we start with evaluating whether or not, or the impact of how that reading list has followed the studentship. So in terms of a win-win situation, it actually helps our curriculum liaison team because they have something tangible to have the first conversation and they have something to follow through for the rest of the academic cycle. This is a page from the curriculum liaison virtual learning environment. And as you can see, it's got reading lists on it. I just want to take you through what you will see. We were also having a conversation last night about stepping outside of Dewey, though that sounds something like a Donald Duck joke, but it isn't. It's actually looking at some sites of our 5 sites are highly vocational sites. And for students, the Dewey system doesn't quite give them the breadth of information, and their retrieval of that information has been particularly poor. So on those sites, we have stepped out and created thematic sites so that a student doing hair and beauty or bricklaying will actually be able to find their resources and utilize the resources. So there we have the discussion. Do we want to have varied or do we want to have used? And I will always say that it's better to have a number of books that students will refer to and read than having a huge amount of resources that nobody signposts to. So the reading lists are aligned to the theme. So this is bricklaying, actually, level 1 and level 2. For those who've ever watched a bricklayer actually create an arch, it is absolute magic. That's an aside. There's also one for applied science, and we have one for English and English literature. And all I'm going to do is just show you quickly what it looks like, very quickly filled in. Each tutor will have a different sort of approach to whether they like journals, whether they prefer books, whether they prefer e-books, whether they prefer websites. And by doing the conversation with the academic staff, we are actually creating something that they are happy to signpost to and that they have to signpost to because the reading list is now embedded in quality and standards. A slightly different reading list for applied science, and again, a very different reading list for English, which includes DVDs. A few years ago, I read an important paper by Orman Simpson about why students leave. And what struck me in this paper was the fact that up to 35% of OU Open University students were leaving before or at the hand-in date for the first assignment. This was a light bulb going on. And if I look back at the years that I was facilitating learning resources and managing the resources, this was a number that was coming up and was anecdotal. We now have evidence. And it's quite interesting that without an intervention, we are asking students to come from wherever they've come from, whatever type of situation. I usually call secondary education an experience that people actually survive. They come into a learning resources center and are asked within 6 weeks of arriving to produce an academic document without necessarily the intervention that's required. I'm not talking about a library induction where we talk about here are your books, here's the printer, here's the opening times, thank you for coming in. What I'm talking about is an intervention of value, again, an impact measurement, value and worth, that makes a difference to the student achieving that first assignment. If you achieve your first assignment, you will stay the course because you suddenly realize it is doable. Students will withdraw from the, but what normally happens is a student doesn't do the first assignment. They then don't attend when that first assignment is due in. They don't attend the next session because they'll be asked about the session they missed and the first assignment that they missed. They don't attend the third session because they don't want to be asked about the two sessions they didn't attend and the first assignment. And if they're not careful, it's four sessions later and they've been withdrawn. So this is a way of doing a successful interaction. So the induction for success that we've created in Sunderland is that all students have this entitlement through their class. The tutor books the session and arrives and stays. That is the key part of this. The tutor stays. And that way the students, the curriculum liaison, and the academic have a dialogue about the first assignment. We don't care about opening times. You don't have to look at printers. We need to look at what's going to be happening in the lives of those scared students in 6 weeks' time. So we have that. The tutor is able there to answer any questions a student may have about the dialogue, the vocabulary being used in the assignment, and the curriculum liaison person is facilitating the session to show what resources are available to support that assignment. And I think that intervention has certainly made a difference at Sunderland. And without the investment in curriculum liaison, I don't think I would be standing here today to be able to say it is a model I can actually impress upon you to look at. So the theme today is measuring impact. Okay. If we look at all the words that come up from the research in measuring impact, we find that the same vocabulary is being used or misused. Measuring impact is about success, it's about qualitative, it's about quantitative, it's about administrative, it's about data, and it's about often. And I like the idea of often because we are continually giving more and more data to more and more people to do less and less with. I personally don't feel that actually footfall across a library threshold actually tells you anything. I don't feel that having books go in and out of a shelf tells you anything either, because sometimes they end up on eBay. I think that we have to look at a different matrix. And what's interesting with all the words is those two words are missing in impact measurement. What is the value and what is the worth? Remember that value is about something held in importance, usefulness, and worth is something that deserves to be valued. And I know that in the research that I did for this, for the paper I'm writing at this for this conference, we were talking about how do we justify our positions? How do we measure the impact that we're having on our clients or customers and make it a valued experience for them? Well, we don't use value. What we say is make it an experience for them. How do we show that we're having an impact? And I think that what we're doing is we're actually looking at it the wrong way around. 5 minutes, okay. The impact measurements, there are 115 universities, 165 higher educational institutions, and 412 further education institutions, all creating their own types of matrix of impact measurement. And we are measuring everything. Fairly soon, I'm going to have a measurement of how many students can get around a round table, but I won't bother to bring that in. In COLRIC, which is the Council for Learning Resources in Colleges, we have 82 standards. Professor Brophy actually talks about the fact that we can have standards, but are our users actually informed enough to make these decisions? And I think that's a very important point. You know, how do we actually give knowledge to users who've never used what they're using? The Scannell also looked at a lot of our impact measures are created and aligned to our services. So we look great. And maybe nationally we look great, but only 8 were actually aligned to institutional performance measures and or impact measurements. And I think that's the thing that at Sunderland we addressed, that it now aligns to the institution and we stand accountable to the institution. I just want to talk about one of the questions we asked about an impact was how many of you have internet at home and how many of you use internet, use e-resources? This was a question that went out to all of our students. And I think, again, if we're going to be looking at an impact, if you're going to be starting to deliver online, you need to know that people can get online. Just to say the dip for 19-plus tends to be people who actually live on their own, and it's not necessarily a priority to have broadband. I just want to talk to you about what we're collating for staff. So our curriculum liaison people have their register of activity, and they revisit that register of activity to drill down and meet with tutors about after the first assignment. These are some of the comments we are getting back after the first assignment. And I just want to... All of them are talking about literary research. All of them are talking about better referencing. More importantly, I want to leave on this last point. Not only did the staff member notice a change in the referencing going on with their students, but they themselves learned something from the session. They themselves had their skill set challenged and changed. And that, to me, is a huge impact measurement. And finally, we can look about whether or not we collate numeric or anecdotal or indeed designed impact feedback. But in essence, if we don't value, if we don't measure the value, and how do we do that, and we don't look at the worth, all we're doing are pushing the numbers further and further and further into the big pot, and it won't go any distance to saying that we offer a valued and worthwhile service. Thank you.